Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai here, film companion critic. I have with me, as usual, Uday Bhatia, main critic. And unfortunately, we're missing Ishita Sengupta today. She is traveling. Would have been great to have her on this episode because this is one of, again, those rare weeks last week where all three of us reviewed pretty much the same stuff. And it was quite a heavy week too because Uday did more than one review, which is quite a thing. We are going to be talking about a show, which is again a rare thing, and I'm glad it's going to be Poacher by Riji Mehta. We had warned you about it earlier this month. It's released on Netflix, and of course the second title we're going to be discussing is Varun Grover's directorial debut, All India Rank, which released in theaters last Friday, and I think it's played, it has a very limited release across cities, So there's your information. We're going to start with All India Rank. Varun Grover, as we know, writer, lyricist for a number of years, also a very famous stand-up comic. This is a directorial debut. It made its debut in festivals last year. It played at Mami also. We didn't watch it there. It did release last week. And it is, on the face of it, it's another IIT aspirant story. But very interesting film. I think mixed feelings about it personally, but Uday, why don't you few lines about the film before we move forward?
Yeah, so it's about this student from Lucknow, Vivek, is played by Bodhisattva Sharma, who is, on his first film, or at least early on in his career. He's a promising student, and so his dad decides to enroll him in one of those coaching classes that prepare you for IIT in Kota. And this, as Rahul just pointed out, is a subject that we've seen a lot of recently, in both film and on in streaming. The treatment out here is slightly different, slightly dreamier kind of coming of age thing, rather than the more focused on the grind series by TVF and of course 12th Fail last year, which caused such a sensation. Vivek is a shy kid, not very happy. It's not his ambition to be studying for IIT. It's more his dad's. So he goes to Kota and he takes a while to sort of open up out there. He makes a few friends and then things sort of start to sort of open up for him, and he lightens up. And the film sort of switches back and forth between his time out there at his in his coaching school and his parents back in Lucknow, and his father, R.K. Singh, played by Shashi Bhushan, and his mother is played by Geeta Agarwal, who was also the mother in 12th Fail. They obviously miss their only child, and we see their lives also sort of unfold after that, and also they come to terms with the pressures that they're putting on their kid, and we see them sort of maybe try and make some changes in their own lives, even though the life that is changing the most is Vivek's.
So as you mentioned, obviously there are two dimensions to this particular film, Vivek's life, which is, of course, in Kota. We've seen it a bunch of times. It's in, as you mentioned, a lot of TVF shows and a bunch of films as well. And Vivek's life, and then parallelly, we see the life of the parents unfold back in Lucknow. And to put it really bluntly, one of them works more than the other, obviously.
Sure.
If you have to simplify things, because for me, the Vivek parts in Kota, look, like I totally agree about the slightly more dreamy, nostalgic treatment. I like the way Grover has sort of designed the film in terms of, slipping in little tidbits of the 90s and pop cultural references and whatnot. And to be honest, I've been seeing it over the, like, because I've been fortunately, unfortunately, reviewing a lot of TVF shows in the last 10 years. I mean, aspirin fatigue, 90s fatigue is a real thing, you know, like nostalgia. After a while, it doesn't charm you as much. Like when you notice a gold spot or a Citra bottle, or you know, some character's name is Shawn after Shawn Michaels in wrestling, or a bunch of small little the Shah Rukh Khan references and whatnot. I guess 10 years ago, they might have like made my ears stand a bit, but it is what it is. You know, all of these stories are personal in their own ways. They are all told by former IIT or ex-Kota sort of aspirants who are now in the film industry. So you have to appreciate the authenticity of these subjects, of these lives. They're very lived in, they're very informed in their own ways. But purely in terms of a viewing experience, there is nothing new to go. There's no direction to go in terms of, say, the protagonist's life here that we see in Kota. There's a girl that he starts liking. There's this friends group, very unlikely. One of them is angsty. One of them is like cool. And, you know, it's just, we've seen it. And there is a coaching class professor who's played by Sheba Chadda, who has a very oddly brief sort of cameo, almost not even a supporting role, really. She's just there. And that's it. That's his life. What really worked for me, and I think worked for you as well, is the parents' life that we see unfolding parallelly back in Lucknow, and the father and the mother, their marriage, the way they start to realize that their very middle class existence is sort of that their sort of defense mechanism, their coping mechanism, is to put pressure on the son, especially the father. I think very nice performance also by Shashi Bhushan, I think. And both of them going through their own problems, they're realizing that IIT is not the be all and end all. And I mean, the transformation didn't entirely work for me. The father's, it was a little too abrupt, and it felt like it was written. It did feel like this was someone's first film, you know, in terms of execution. So, and the ideas on paper, like that whole maths equation that Grover uses as a metaphor for the story itself, all those ideas on paper, very nice, but the translation just didn't entirely work for me.
Yeah, if you're trying to touch my heart through maths equations, then that's like, I can't. I'm sorry. It's just too much unbending for me to. I'm very much with you on the parents' story sort of working a lot better. And I don't know. I think partly it's also because I thought the writing was better in their case. I thought the acting was a lot better. Wasn't particularly taken by any of the four performances by the Vivek and his three friends that he makes, Chandan, Rinku, and Sarika. Sarika, he starts liking also by the end, and she likes him. I don't know that there is one aspect that we've seen that dynamic play out now a lot. As you mentioned, they are sort of types. The cool girl, the sort of intense, slightly harried guy, and the casual guitar strumming guy. And we've seen those types before, and out here it didn't feel like there just wasn't too much in those dynamics that felt fresh or particularly interesting. And I think it showed that they are also fairly new performers. I'm guessing the four of them are fairly new. I certainly haven't seen any of them in anything. Those didn't work for me as well. Whereas I thought Shashi Bhushan and Geeta Agarwal were fantastic as the parents. Geeta Agarwal, we've already seen in 12th Fail what she can do, and she's, I thought, quite wonderful out here. And Shashi Bhushan has this really again, not a character that is very unfamiliar to us. The sort of strict dad who has a little bit of a, you know, a change by the end of the film. But he really does give it like a gentleness and a humor, which is really nice. I was wondering whether I'd seen him in anything before this. And I thought I didn't. And then I kind of looked up his filmography and I remembered that he's there in that in Khufiya. And he's in that wonderful scene where he's ringing the doorbell of that Vamika Gabi's house. And then he looks up at the hidden camera and Tabu kind of grins because it's such a funny gesture. That was a great scene.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you know, like the parents, of course, seasoned performers also, it feels like. And I like those. I like the ideas behind that. Like, you know, normally the parents in all these stories are sort of reduced to caricatures. They're strict and, you know, like they have a couple of scenes here and there, but it's mostly episodic and there's no real arc to their existence. They all exist in service of like the young teenage protagonist. Here, they seem to have a life of their own. We see them as humans, not just as these parents putting pressure on their son, who's obviously very reluctantly going through his journey. And there's a sense of balance in, you know, how Grover has written a bunch of this, like in terms of the stereotypes of this aspirant film. I felt like he was trying to, he sort of knew that we are very familiar with a lot of tropes because of TVF, because of other things. And because it's just one of those very fertile underdog stories that will never stop being told in India. I felt like he knew that we were aware of all of that. And I mean, in his own way, he was trying to get like some, you know, like he was, I don't think it was a film very judgmental of its environment for starters, you know, like it, I don't think it wanted, him to sort of break free or like come of age in a sense. It didn't show him as this aspiring artist who's stuck in this IIT environment. It very much ended with him giving an exam and not sort of really showing us whether he got in or not, because that's not the point. But it did show us about like a boy, you know, coming to sort of terms with the wholeness of the situation and that entire middle class aspirant syndrome that we see. I like that it wasn't, even Shiva Chadda's character, for example, you think that she's going to be like an antagonist in the beginning, little colorful, little like she jokes about things and whatnot, but, and we've seen it in a lot of these shows, but in the end she just sort of just appears and disappears and there's not much of her to say. So in that sense, yeah, sure, I appreciate the balance, but you know, again, I think like where it works really a lot and where I think the rest of the film could have really profited from is the parents' relationship and the way the dynamics between them keeps changing, because the mother, who's played by Geeta Agrawal, she knows, she sort of subconsciously blames her husband for driving away her son, and her time with her son is over in her head. She knows that he's going to grow up, he's going to lead his own life. And, you know, and the time she actually loses her patience with her husband, despite the son's situation, is only when something happens in their own lives, when a crisis unfolds and when she goes through a crisis, because at the sort of PCO booth she operates, there's the pervert kid who I thought was a funny actor, actually. And that's when her husband doesn't stand up for her, and that's when that tension I really liked in their marriage then, because till then she was quiet about it.
Yeah, I also liked that the father's subplot, basically, that he's put in suspension because the cake that he orders at work for Independence Day turns out to have like an upside down flag. And I like that that could almost be like a stand-up routine from one of Grover's shows, you know, that story. It works quite nicely. It neither is like a dazzling like idea or anything, either of these two plots, the pervert at the phone booth or the office thing, but they kind of, I think they come together nicely. Because the point of both of them ends up kind of with Shashi Bhushan's character being asked to kind of sort of step up and be a little more assertive. And it also brings, you know, the mother out of her shell a little bit and out of her sorrow and sort of gives her something to do. Some of those exchanges are really, really nice when he's trying to make her laugh, when she's like really upset. And you really get the sense that these are two people who spent like decades together. With very little effort, they managed to convey that. So those bits I liked a lot. And like little details which are there, which is like, he only smokes cigarettes thrice a year on national holidays. And he sort of takes them out of this tin that is hidden. Not because he's hiding it from his son or his family, but because he's hiding it from himself, which I thought was a very nice little touch. Another thing I thought of, while I was watching it, which struck me as maybe a little innovation in this otherwise, this sort of middle of the road film, this lands very much in that genre. But I thought one little innovation which was there is these moments of sort of surrealism that he introduces either through animation or these sort of slightly weird touches that happen sometimes. Sometimes it's just the editing becomes like a little strange sometimes, or there's a montage. Did those strike you as at all, like during while you were watching those?
I mean, yeah, like I was just going to ask you actually, because there's one is the animation and the slightly quirky hybrid touch that, he brings to the film, which we mostly see in films about misfits, right? Like about kids or teenagers who want to be artists or who have a wild imagination and stuff. So I thought that was at least for me, it was a nice little take on the fact that this particular teenager doesn't have any lofty inspirations or lofty aspirations to be someone else. He just doesn't want to be in Kota at that point. Like, he just wants to be a regular engineer. He's sort of just tense of being at the environment where everyone is a topper. He just doesn't know what he wants to do. But I like the fact that they used animation to tease at those particular tropes, because that's when we normally see it in a lot of Hindi film or Indian cinema. Mm-hmm. And I like that touch. But the editing was a little strange to me. I was going to ask you, because I felt like the rhythm was really off in a lot of the montages. And montages are very important for films like this, right? Like for sort of young characters, going through time where time itself becomes a bit of a construct. So especially towards the end, you can't tell that the film is ending, which is one thing, which is fine. But, when it sort of builds up to a particular tragedy, 10 or 15 minutes from the end, you can't tell where the film is heading, mostly because I feel like the editing is slightly off, the rhythm is off. And sometimes in the beginning, that rhythm may have worked in when there's not a lot at stake, but something was really off. I felt like executionally, there was an issue towards the end. I mean, it could be surrealist or whatever it is, but it just didn't work for me in the last half an hour.
I don't know if it bothered me, but yeah, it is fairly atypical. Like, you can definitely feel a different kind of rhythm than what one would expect, especially in the montages. Sometimes it's very strange. Sometimes it'll go forward and back in time with no real connection to the rest of the thing. Like, you don't always get that in these kind of films, but if the whole film had that sort of design, then you could understand it. But it only usually happens in these montages. Sometimes, you'll have a voiceover going, but the thing will jump forward, then it'll jump back. Slightly interesting choices, I thought, for that. For me, it kind of synced up with the animations and with the the slight dreaminess of the whole thing, but it is a little unusual. I do agree. So
yeah, it just felt a bit distracting by the end, because I get it, you don't really have a three-act structure in films like this, but even if it's slice of life and whatnot, but especially because you have one parent or one adult transforming in a scene towards the end, and you have like the son acquiring a sense of agency after a particular tragedy. It just, it has to add up at some point. Like, it has to feel a little more organic. So I guess, yeah, it did like bother me a little. And I guess that's why I say that it felt like a first film in some instances. I was a little disappointed with the fact that they didn't use Sheba Chadda more, because it was very promising in the beginning. I felt like, because they actually had a nice little quirky history about her character, backstory, yeah, and whatnot. And they didn't really move forward with it after that. She was just there whenever they were giving exams or mock tests or whatever it is. And yeah, and that's about it. I guess, again, that was a nod to the fact that these characters normally become like very influential characters in TVF shows. These have become these iconic little like memes and tropes. But here she just like disappears, and I don't know how much of it was reactive, but it didn't work for me. I wish they had done better, because she's just, I love watching her on screen.
Yeah, she's fantastic. But out here, yeah, it's strange. She just sort of comes in, does cool professor things, and then leaves. It's not really much more of a character than that. There's really no connection between her and Vivek at any level. I thought it was quite a likable film. Some very interesting choices. Overall, I wish that I think different decisions as far as the casting, writing, might have helped. Frankly, I mean, this is now a subject that's been it's been done a lot, so it'll really take a lot to put a new spin on it, frankly.
Yeah, it's come to a point when sometimes not even a new spin, like 12 Fail, just like commit to, you know, the fundamentals of your story. And yeah, of course, that was like, this is slightly more personal. This was memoirish. That is like based on a true story and all. But again, I feel like it's all about sort of really, rather than reinventing stuff, just like commit to whatever you have and do it in the best way possible. Felt like this was lacking at that fundamental level. But as you said, you know, I think fairly watchable, fairly likable, breezy, and little slight. Like I expected a bit more. Now it happens when you have a fine writer like Varun Grover making his debut. You come with a certain sort of baggage, expectation, and you know, I watched a short film also that didn't live up to the hype either. So I guess, yeah, I mean, eventually you'd rather be watching such stories being made by such artists, but I hope like there is an evolution curve in the future. I hope he gets to make more films as well. I guess that's about it with All India Rank. Would you like to address the elephant in the room?
Would you like to address the elephant in the room? Since you wrote like 5,000 words on it.
Honestly, just a little less than 5,000 words. Like, wow. I mean, 1,900, but that's not the point. No. Why don't you start with Poacher? Because I'm actually glad you reviewed it, because I was going to bully you into reviewing it eventually. And I know your policy, you don't watch a lot of shows. But just like a few lines about Poacher before we get into it. I actually enjoyed your tweets about it also, especially about Nimisha, which I laughed a lot. But
fantastic. She's really cool. I this could become like a Nimisha Sajjan fan episode right here. But this is Richie Mehta's new series. He created Delhi Crime, and he directed the first season of that. And that's quite significant, because you can see a lot of what he brought to Delhi Crime out here, in that it is a procedural, it's very methodical. There's a very sort of granular approach to setting out the whole terrain, you know, the stakes that are there. All the characters are really well etched, and it's a really big cast, but everyone gets like, you know, everyone's interesting. The acting is just across the board brilliant. And these were a lot of these characteristics were there in Delhi Crime also, but I think Poacher improves on that quite a bit, and we'll get to that. So it's in short, basically there is a revelation about a recent poaching incident that happens, in which almost 20 elephants are killed. And this comes to the notice of the authorities, and to save face, they put a anti-poaching team on it, which is led by this ex-RAW agent played by Dibyendu Bhattacharya. And he called Neil, and he brings in Mala, is played by Nimisha Sajjan, who is a forest official, ex-forest official, now working in a bird sanctuary, which she's back. So they bring her back, and she brings in this programmer called Alan, played by Roshan Mathew, who is just a nature nut. And so they bring him in for his expertise in that. And then other characters join, and they get on the case of these poachers. And we see over 8 episodes how they track them down from the very low level hunters to slightly higher ones. They follow the chain up, they reach politicians. And finally they reach an ivory trader who's based in Delhi, and her contacts, and they sort of how they sort of get the whole ring under you know, how they map it all out and bring it down. And this was actually based on a true story that had come to Richie Mehta when he was shooting another film as a possible thing which he could include, and he found it so fascinating that he told them to hold on, and that he'd come back to them, and then he did, and created Poacher.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I feel like I also agree with the fact that it's sort of one rung above Delhi Crime, in, not just in terms of procedural, because we have been seeing quite a few sort of ecological thrillers over the last few years, at least in the long-form landscape. I've seen a few. There was, of course, Shaunak Sen's documentary, which was actually non-fiction, all that great. And, you know, in terms of that urgency of sort of saving the planet from humans, from itself, I felt like this was like a sort of a social message drama, which didn't really feel like it, which was very well decorated, very well disguised, because you don't really realize that they actually give the message isn't the entire point of the story. I felt like so much of it was about how difficult we make things for ourselves, and I think Richie Mehta does a fantastic job of just designing it from like bottom to top, and I felt like there were just so many creative decisions in this series that work wonders for it. Like, especially, I mean, I found it a bit strange in the beginning that they're starting a lot of shots with like animals, CGI animals basically in the backdrop, and then, you know, a scene starts and the camera starts panning to the human scene that's happening. Lot of animals we see. I became a big fan of it by the end, because
The opposite happened with me.
Got tired of it.
I started off liking it, and then by the end I was like, you know, okay, we got it.
They're very expressive animals, honestly. Like, I
they're too expressive. I think they had so many emotions on their face that I was like, I felt like, you know.
Yeah, my theory for that was like, maybe they were dead and this is their ghost basically holding us accountable. But anyway, I went through a bunch of theories. Like, it can't be so simple. But you know, like, coming to the story itself, to the filmmaking, you know, very tight show. Very difficult to say that when there are 8 massive episodes. I felt like the conflict at the core of it, which was basically the forest officials and this team having to track down this entire racket, crack this entire ivory poaching racket, which touches upon all classes and sections of society, from, as you said, the lower level poachers and the artists to these rich people in Delhi, and as well as politicians and industrialists who we aren't shown, but it is very hinted at that at the core of it, especially the opening titles. I got really nervous while watching the opening titles. I was like, Amazon's going to get like in trouble again, because they were just ivory statues of Hindu gods, which was a very powerful message, because that is exactly the kind of poaching that the team is after to stop, and that is exactly what's made of the ivory. It basically services the language of religion, and we know that in this country everything pales in the name of superstition and religion. And I thought that conflict at the center, where this team has to fight the very society, the very core of the beliefs and the superstitions of society, to catch humans who are basically exploiting the environment. I thought that was very interesting. It was risky also, a lot of subtext there. Could have gone in very, very strong directions, but I think it did its job very subtly, especially I like the opening credits. It reminded me of The Crown, but like a more ecological version of it.
Sherni also, I think, is, and you mentioned that in yours, a good comparison for this, because I think these are two, they're about like people like passionate about the ecology and preserving it, and has like two really memorable female characters at in the lead. What also I think is in common is that both of them treat their audiences like adults, they are, there's a lot of information that is imparted, they just expect people to keep up with it. Poacher has a cast of like at least two dozen or so important speaking parts, and many more smaller ones, but I would say that there's easily about 15 to 20 speaking parts that are important for the series, and yet somehow every single one of them manages to be memorable. And that does, that's absolutely to Richie Mehta's credit, the way he handles that. And he just has that knack of like these small character sketches that are fantastic. The poacher named Araku, played by Suraj Pops, who reminds me of Michael K. Williams. He has just such an unbelievably great face. He's great. He plays the poacher whose confession kind of kicks off things. And then there's an excellent episode, I think it's the sixth, where we diverge into two timelines, one tracking the poachers on their on the hunt that set off this thing, and later with the forest officials being led by Araku to the site where the killings had happened. And excellent episode, stuff to deal with for Mala also, because her father was an ex, was a poacher, and she has that guilt that she carries, and it sort of suggested that it drives her, to become an even more dedicated forest official than she would have been. And excellent episode, but I was just the characterization of Araku, so deftly done. He's not really there in too many other episodes, but he's fantastic in this. Even much smaller scenes, like the guy who's giving them the gun, the poachers, before they go out. He's fantastic in just one scene, and he's so funny, and he's not at all scared of these poachers who are being like kind of brash and threatening, and he's just very cool, and he's going about his business. And you leave those kind of scenes thinking, what's that guy's story like? I'd like to spend more time with that guy, but that's all we see of him. And it's a very nice feeling to be able to like encounter characters like that who may not even like come back in the next episode or ever in the series, but you're like, oh, that guy is memorable.
Yeah, I mean, the cast apart, like, and we'll get to the sort of the primary performances also, but I felt like the hardest part for Poacher in general was, and you know, I mentioned this in the review also, that it was basically to platform that sincerity that these three feel, right? Like Mala, Alan, and Neil, they are, first of all, wildlife nuts. They really care for the environment. They are sort of oddballs. They are misfits in this very human sort of environment where people only care about human life and sort of corruptions and other things. And many times they are like mocked at, almost teased during the series that, you know, why do you care about animals so much? They're just animals. It's just poaching. It's just sort of a business. And there are many, you know, there are terrorist drug dealers you'd rather catch. And they compare poachers to, they put them on the same sort of level as the other two, which says quite a lot. It's a sincerity that's very difficult to sell in a show like this, because you have, I mean, it's, of course, the performances do a great job of it. The writing, the exposition is difficult to also sell, because you have Mala sort of breaking into these little monologues about elephants and about animals, where she genuinely sounds like a child who is still in awe of nature around her. And Alan, of course, is such a geek. He has like, he's a snake expert on the side. He has such a, almost an implausible sort of vigilantism about him. And even Neil is obsessed with turtles, and he, you know, he has a health problem, and it's really hard to sort of to really write their desperation to save elephants, to save animals, into a story like this at this time, you know, at this point of time. And it's hard to take seriously, and a lot of the supporting characters don't take them seriously till they're literally like bang down the door with their urgency. And I thought that was, for me, a considerable victory of the series, because in the beginning, even I was a little worried. I was like, why is Mala so serious about this? And why can it like ever, I mean, is it even possible that, you know, humans are so, like, at least Indian humans are so desperate about this? And I think they did a very good job of giving backstories to all of them, and sort of letting their past define them, and to slowly reveal their relationship with their jobs. Because, you know, we've seen a bunch of shows and films about, like, tracking down, you know, terrorists and murderers and, you know, and war and nationalists and whatnot. But this is a muted sort of theme in comparison, because, first of all, we don't consider it as important, which is the whole point of the story. And secondly, it's really hard to create that atmosphere where everything is at stake, and not let it be a low stakes environment. So I thought Poacher did a very good job of eventually selling that.
I halfway through the series, I was getting a little bit worried that I had seen all of Richie Mehta's cards. And when I say cards, I mean like from his season of Delhi Crime and then the first four episodes of Poacher, in which, in the sense that it felt a little bit like, you know, I was eating vegetables, and you know, vegetables are very good for me, and it was, you know, excellent, and everyone is doing a good job, and it's well written, and it's this thing. But, you know, it's just, it's a lot of the same. Like, there's a meeting, usually in some kind of office, and then there's a raid, and then there's an interrogation, and then nothing happens with it, and then there's another raid, and another meeting, another interrogation. And that seemed to kind of, the first four episodes kind of seemed to have this over and over again. And I was just waiting, you know, hoping that there'd be like a little more variation. Like, some directors are just really good at this kind of stuff, in the sense that, you know, it'll be the same thing, but they'll just vary the setting, the tone. They'll make it seem different, even if it's not. I gave the example when I was writing of the episode in Scam 1992, where they open the thing in the dance bar, where Harshad Mehta's whatever opponents are scheming, but there's a dance thing happening. And it's the same thing. That scene could happen in an office and you'd get the exact same information out of it. But because you varied the setting, you varied the tone, it's become more memorable. And I thought there was a bit of that missing in the first four episodes, even though I was perfectly happy watching it. I was just getting a little bit like bogged down by the sameness of it, which is why the fifth episode really came as like a refreshing change, because it had that amazing bit at the wedding, where Alan is, who's been lying to his family about his involvement in the investigation. And he doesn't want to get into another argument with his wife, so he lies. And he sort of just slips out of the wedding, goes, does like a fairly dangerous sort of raid, sees it through and comes back out there. It's so much fun. Roshan Mathew is fantastic in that bit. And it's great, because that could have been done in a more conventional manner. They could have just gone on the raid and it would have been the same thing, but this made it a lot more memorable.
Yeah, and you know, extension of that, the entire Delhi portion, once it starts with the latter parts of the series, where they go to basically, first of all, like find proof against this very rich art dealer woman named Poonam, and who's basically who has an entire hidden storehouse of these ivory, sort of millions, crores and crores of ivory items. And I really like the fact that it was sort of turned into a race against time. You know, yeah. Like there were a lot of formalities, a lot of red tape, could have been fairly straightforward, because a lot of the portions happening in Kerala, when they're sort of nabbing one poacher after another or interrogating one poacher, one family, their children, their wives, whatever it is, you're right about the fact that, you know, that the tone tends to remain more or less uniform for a while, which is why I feel like it was a very good decision for them to sort of shift the chase to the city, which also gives you plenty of ground to make like these visual metaphors, and Delhi's pollution, and which is woven right into like the urgency of their mission also. And I really like that they, you know, like that the Mala had to sort of, there were arrest warrants, there were a lot of technicalities that were turned into like genuine human things, not like these slick productions where everything goes right and, you know, you have like this smug sort of agents doing everything by the book and winning the day. Here you could sense the struggle of Mala and Neil just to make the bureaucracy work in their favor, to accomplish the most basic things, to get someone arrested, to get someone like whatever it is, to get proof of something, to get a photo of something. So that made it considerably more dynamic, more sort of exciting, more kinetic. And I really enjoyed the last few episodes, because even though if you zoom out and look at the bigger picture, it's more or less the same story. The same thing is happening again, and they're just going after the higher rung of people. I just felt like there's far more space to it, narrative space to it also. And of course, you know, like the performances, the physicality of the performances also changed towards the second half. You get these little characters in the Delhi police also that remind you of Delhi crime. There's a female cop who helps the Kerala team. That it just felt like there's a good balance towards the end, which really worked for the series.
Yeah, though, you know, a little bit stereotyped with the whole Delhi thing, you know, I'll let that go. I've seen worse. It's fun to see actors you know sort of come and do a great job in a couple of episodes and leave. Kani Kusruti has an excellent sort of, I think she's there for the first two episodes and then sort of disappears after that, but she's fantastic in that. And Denzel Smith turns up for one scene, and it's a fantastic scene.
And, you know, such a difficult scene because a lot of exposition there. Like, you're basically telling the viewers that, listen, don't think that we don't know there's another angle to this also. But he just does such a good job of explaining it.
Yeah, it's he's really good. I've watched that scene a couple of times now because it's just so much fun, and his delivery is so dry. He's playing Neil's superior, and he's being supportive, but at the same time he's kind of giving them a reality check about the whole industry. And I thought a very interesting bit which he mentions is how this practice of pruning the tusks of the elephants, how that keeps everyone just happy enough, even though it is illegal to sort of allow the trade to kind of go on, but not have like actual elephant killing. And how that has been like the sort of uneasy peace that's been maintained until like a whole bunch of elephants were killed and this investigation started. And it's, again, like, just in terms of, that's Mehta trusting the audience that they're paying attention and they'll understand what he's saying. And it's not about saying that this is better or that that's an ideal way to continue. But that's what kind of keeps things going, like, you know, these small compromises that you make. And I'm very, very impressed by these sort of these small doses of people telling off Dibendu's character and Nimisha's character, who are like very sort of driven, bossy, self-righteous people. But they often get told off by people lower and higher on the rung, when they confront them with like, okay, but, you know, you may have all your values, but this is the reality.
Yeah, I really like Dibendu in this. He played a very Rajan DK character. Like, I felt he played like Neil Banerjee as a very, I mean, dry also, but I love the way the camera used to follow him, the way he used to like exercise his authority. He's the only Hindi-speaking guy amongst them. He's a Bengali, obviously, posted there. The others speak in Malayalam. It was all very, like, fluid, by the way. It wasn't, like, calling for attention at all. It's just that that was their communication channel. And you never really noticed the change in language. And I really liked the way Dibendu sort of handled his team. And, the way he was also trying to be a little performative about leading the whole thing. While going through a domestic crisis of his own, there's a sadness about him saying, don't end up like me, both in terms of like my family, as well as he has obviously a lung tumor of sorts. So, you know, he's obviously a symptom of that environment they're fighting for. So, it could have been a very sort of morally upright, little stereotypical character, but I think he gave it so much depth and personality. And I love his mustache in it. It just worked wonders. I'm a big fan of actors who you normally don't see with mustaches suddenly rocking something like this and making it part of their character. It just, I mean, he brought that required amount of levity to a very, very serious sort of journey, because Mala, you would like to maybe talk about Nimisha's performance here.
I like her in pretty much everything that I see her in. And there is some quality about her and her, just her style in general, that sort of seems to inform all the characters that she's playing. There is a sort of forcefulness that she brings to all the parts that basically is just like, you know, I don't want to be kidded around with. Let's get to the point. And obviously there are degrees and degrees to that. Great Indian Kitchen, a very different character from the one she played in, say, Naya 2 or, Thuramukkam or something. But all of these have this kind of, I'd say, like a lack of artifice to her playing. Like, she has no time for like any false overtures towards the camera. Like, everything is direct. Like, let's get to the point of the emotion at this very stage. She just has that quality. Like, there's a very direct kind of communication between her and, I feel, the viewer, the camera.
Yeah, like, you see the amount of reaction shots that were used here with her, right? Because there's this thing, no-nonsense glaring, that she does throughout the show, which, as you mentioned, you know, no time for bullshit sort of thing. And she does it with her own team members, with the people she's interrogating, with the perpetrators, with everyone. You can't, and you almost feel, you feel very intimidated, just like the camera would. Like, don't go too close or she'll explode sort of thing. And even when Alan is explaining numbers to her, the camera keeps cutting to her face. And you almost expect her to go that, you know, come on, quick, I don't have time. But she never really says it. She listens to him. And her face, her expression remains the same. Like, you know, I'm putting up with this. Let's get to the point fast so that we can get into action. Because she's just desperate to make a difference and to stop everything that's happening. And I feel like that performance is so tuned into that character. Because, as I said earlier, you know, very difficult character to stage. And especially with her being a woman, having a past, father, having an ex also working on the case, batting for that ex, even though he's a lazy guy. It just, there's so many layers to it. And she just, with the way she looks at most people, you derive whatever sort of subtext you have to from that particular scene. I really liked the way, her sort of reactions were edited throughout the show, because it worked wonders in terms of the rhythm of every moment of her character, in terms of how characters were responding to her and how she was aching to be taken more seriously by all the men in her field towards the end of the show as well. So it just, very measured, very clinical performance, but also lot of heart towards the end, which I didn't expect, became very poignant.
And, you know, it's not like this is a character that is unfamiliar to us. In a way, it's been overdone. The sort of hard as nails female cop, it's been kind of it's been done badly, and it's been overdone in the last 10 years. And I'm trying to like think of, like, say, Rani Mukherjee playing this role or something, and it would be completely different, because there's, again, just there's a genuine quality when Nimisha Sajjan is doing it. It has that directness that kind of just comes through. It has that, it really does. It does not feel like play acting. You actually feel a bit scared. And the characters are definitely a bit scared of her. And she tells everyone off. She tells her superiors off at one point. Then she sort of very grudgingly kind of apologizes to them. And they don't seem at all fazed, because I think, again, they realize that, you know, this is just her. Like, you know, this is what you get. It's not like she means it badly. It is just the way she is. And it's the same quality that will probably get them the poachers in the end. Roshan Mathew also, I thought, was lovely in that role. Good contrast. They made him the soft character to her, and Dibyendu's fairly, both of them are fairly like brusque characters, and they made him like the kind of sweet, nice character, soft-spoken, smart guy, but again, has some touching moments with his family, where he realizes, you know, that even though he is trying to protect them, that it's not a sustainable thing. And it's not like he can wait for the case to get over, that he has to make like a few overtures towards them. He has to kind of unbend a few of his rules and be a little better to them during that time itself. And I thought that was a very nice gesture, because we give so much leeway to characters who are like, oh, you know, after the job is over, I'll return back to my life and all. But he kind of, within that itself, he finds a way to kind of come closer to them, which is very nice.
Really fascinating about all three of them, especially even Roshan Mathews, like, all three of them are technically fighting for a future that is basically uncertain. You don't know when you don't know the specifics of how the world will sort of how the world is getting like polluted or like or dying, as they put it, like the world is committing suicide or whatever it is. They're fighting for a future, not the present. So there's no like immediacy to their mission, right? Like they're not trying to catch terrorists or drug dealers before they strike next. They are basically trying to like puncture an industry that is slowly killing the planet in very indirect ways and direct ways, of course. But it's a slow burning sort of corruption that we are talking about. So they always have to keep looking at the bigger picture, and they always have to keep. And we hear Alan, we hear Neil saying that, you know, like they'll otherwise our kids will end up like us and this and that. So it's always looking towards the future. So their families are never going to understand why they are so present in the moment. And that entire juxtaposition of like how sort of desperate they are to do it within a stipulated period of time compared to what they are fighting for, when we don't know you know, if they are actually saving anything at all. I think that little contrast really works in favor of the show. And I think the performances really add to that, because they have to keep reminding the audience, saying that, you know, we are trying to save the next 3 or 4 generations, next 10 generations. We're not like, there's no immediate effect to our mission right now. So yeah, it's a difficult balance. And I think, yeah, even Roshan Mathew, very nice scenes with his son, the few moments that he has, especially after the church episode towards the end, where he's just sitting with him, going through photos that his son has taken. Very nice little moments of stillness throughout the show, for Mala, for Alan, for even Neil. That I think nicely written into the show, and especially towards the end, when it becomes a little too intense, when there's actually a race against time, there's a plane waiting at the airport, there's this chase through the Delhi streets and all, it's very easy to forget what's at stake. And that what's at stake is eventually we never forget, thanks to, like, I think thanks to, in a large part, to these performances.
Yeah, very. And like just little details woven through the whole thing, how their phone ringtones are bird calls. For both Mala and Alan, it makes sense for Mala to an extent, because, you know, she's in the forest and stuff, so maybe like not to disturb the animals, but for Alan it's just because, you know, that's his life, that's his passion, and it's a very nice touch. And these are like, I think these are things that really I think Richie Mehta can sort of make his stuff work. I'm keen to see what he does next. I think he's good at this sort of long form stuff, and I'd like to see more from him. Though a complete change of genre, I'd be interested. After 2 procedurals, I think if he takes something very different, I would, I think that will be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, he's very good at what he does, and very difficult genre to pull off also, especially over 8-10 episodes, whatever it is. And I'm just glad that he's still making sort of easy. And it's a very forensic gaze also after a while. And we know that he doesn't really live in India. He also, it's very easy to exoticize this sort of story, right? You're going into nature and India is known for all these stereotypes, right? Like for elephants and in the West and all. And it could have very easily sort of devolved into that kind of story told by an NRI through his gaze. But the way he gets into it is, I don't think a lot of local filmmakers might have also been able to. And the amount of research, you can sense it with a lot of scenes, with a lot of episodes, a lot of characterizations. I love the fact that they were chasing this faceless villain for the first 3 episodes, and you know, we think that it's going to be a very main player in the series, and this shows up dead at the end of the 2nd or 3rd episode, and that's it. A little of a backstory we see in episode 6, which you were talking about, and which only goes to show that there are many levels of this particular racket, and it doesn't matter who they are after. So I think, yeah, Richie Mehta is probably one of the better long-form filmmakers out there, very glad that sort of we get to see Poacher, and as you said, I'm keen to see what he does next. Is there anything else you'd like to add about Poacher?
No, not much. You want to talk about any of the other releases? I haven't seen Crack yet.
I mean, I can't believe you haven't seen Crack. You're a jambaz.
I have some catching up to do. I opted to see Oppenheimer for a third time instead. But I will get to Crack.
If you're going to make another action list, you must. And put it at number 3 this time, maybe. because to be honest, the first action sequence, the opening moments of the film are pretty impressive, I hate to admit, before it all goes pear-shaped. But yeah, Crack, as you know, as Uday mentioned, it's a Vidyut Jamwal actioner. I think it'll probably, unless someone's making a very specific action list every year, I don't think it's going to be of any use to anyone. It was a very bad film. What do I say? It has Arjun Rampal playing Arjun Rampal villain, which is basically Ravan and Om Shanti Om all over again, but like with very less to do. Yeah, very weird film. It's 2.5 hours long, so watch it at your own peril. And Ishita would have enjoyed discussing Crack because I think she was going through some sort of existential crisis while watching it on a Friday morning. I had the privilege of watching it the previous night in a screening, so didn't hurt me as much. But it's one of those reviews you can crank out in like 2 hours or 1 hour. And it won't make a difference to your life except the 3 or 4 hours lost while reviewing it. But I have to admire the tenacity of Jamwal to keep releasing these films and to keep trying to act in these films. If any of you are fortunate enough to watch it on a streaming platform when it does come, do let us know what you think don't blame us. Other than that, yeah, it was pretty much that was the week. There was also a Netflix docu-series that was supposed to release, the Indrani Mukherjee series, but that got stayed by the High Court, I think. The CBI was fighting for that, so I don't know when it'll release now. But I did end up writing the review of that, and I don't know when that'll come out, whenever the show releases. So I technically reviewed like one extra thing last week, which I don't know will release. A lot of stuff releasing over the next few weeks. There's Kiran Rao's new film, Lapata Ladies, and bunch of other interesting stuff, including an indie film called Fairy Folks, which we hopefully will talk about next week. We'll keep you posted about that. And if you have any suggestions, do write into us on Twitter or contact us. And we'll be back soon, hopefully with Ishita next time. Take care and thanks for listening.